we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Truth. Truth is that which is consistent with reality. Unfortunately, science, quote-unquote science, has neglected it, avoided it, and it's been to the detriment of millions, maybe billions. But it was very interesting how obvious it's been to all of us that the Congress is taking up this concept with a congressional hearing last week that was very interesting. And Jordan, if you don't mind playing that clip.
Yeah, the first thing is interestingly enough, the only person that showed up was the editor of Science magazine. The Lancet editor, as well as the New England Journal of Medicine editor, did not show up. Their name, their names are on the desk, but they were not there present. But I wanted to kind of play this 4-minute segment with Brad Winstrom, who's the chairman of the committee, and his kind of presentation of what happened, because I think it's pretty good.
Today, the Select Subcommittee is holding a hearing to examine the relationship between scientific journals and the government. This is not a hearing to see how the government can be more involved in the journal editorial process, but to make sure that the government does not involve itself or influence this process. Academic, scientific, and medical journals are an incredibly important tool to spread research to the masses. There's no denying the awesome power of these periodicals, as well as their editors, that they hold over the medical and scientific communities after the COVID-19 pandemic. We see that, and it affects the world, for that matter. I utilize journals in my practice on almost a daily basis. They're an important component to the practice of science and medicine. And because of that, there can be no place for politics or inappropriate government influence. Journals and subsequently their editors are telling the world about research that has been conducted, yet it's important to note they are not necessarily always the arbiters of truth. They provide a forum where scientific claims are made, defended, and debated by peer review, as it should be. However, we saw a breakdown of that during the pandemic. Rather than journals being a wealth of information and opinions about this novel virus, of which we knew so little, they helped establish a party line that literally put a chilling effect on scientific research regarding the origins of COVID-19 and scientific communications. As I have stated time and time again, this subcommittee was established so we can collectively take a look back on the pandemic and see what we can do better for the next time. We invited the editors-in-chief of The Lancet, Nature, and Science. Only the editor of Science has had the courage to come and help us be better. And we're very thankful to Dr. Thorpe for being here today, and I appreciate the frank and professional conversation we had before today. The purpose of this hearing is to demystify the publication process. Editors hold an extraordinary amount of power within the journals and publication process, a process that is a black box to most of the public. They act as an umpire to judge the scientific research that is being published. Like an umpire, it's vital they know about the sport and rules of play, but they themselves should never be in the competition. Well, that is what appeared to have happened during COVID-19, and it's important to separate opinion versus scientifically proven fact and to highlight that varying hypotheses may exist. The publications of papers like Proximal Origin, which this subcommittee has exposed as lacking in scientific integrity, as well as being prompted by Dr. Fauci and Dr. Collins, and the Lancet letter, where the Lancet did not even bother to check for conflicts of interest, it set a precedent from two of the most prestigious journals in the world that the natural origin of COVID-19 was the only theory plausible. Period. The end. That's not the case. And anyone else who had even the inkling of another plausible scientific thought was immediately labeled a conspiracy theorist. Conspiracy theorist. How is that acceptable in the scientific community when the entire crux of the field is open for debate? There's value in giving science a fair hearing. It should be the most pure and honest form of debate. We're holding this hearing to help shed light on the journal process so everyone can have a greater understanding of how business is conducted or maybe should be conducted. And I want to express my disappointment that Dr. Skipper from Nature and Dr. Horton from Lancet declined to participate today. But I again want to reiterate our appreciation to Dr. Thorpe standing up, showing integrity to testify before this select subcommittee today. And I look forward to a strong.
So I think he does a pretty good presentation there of what is, what the purpose of journals are. And I think we've gotten far away from that as they've been influenced not only by really governments, obviously by funding research, but most importantly, and he probably left this out, is pharmaceutical interest. There's no question that the hold on, especially the American journals like Science and New England Journal, American JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical, I mean, they are basically not only the studies themselves often, but the magazines, the print, the money that keeps these journals alive comes from pharmaceutical advertising.
That's right. As does a lot of our NBC, CBS, Fox News, CNN, all of those major media, legacy media outlets are supported by them to a large degree. But I think it's interesting. I was looking on BioRxIV or MedRxIV preprint server. And there's a study, a paper out of China that is funded by Moderna saying that they're looking for ways to obtain or develop monoclonal antibodies or polyclonal antibodies for future pandemics. And they admit at the very beginning that the monoclonals that we have had available with this are no longer effective because they were old strains. And it reminded me of last week's interview with Brett Weinstein interviewing Ryan Cole on Dark Horse podcast, that if you use the same logic, the shots should never have been given because the prior strains, and you've talked about this before, the prior strains weren't going to be, the vaccines, the latest and greatest vaccines aren't going to be beneficial toward the retired strains, the extinct strains. And everything that our government has done at all levels, international, national, local, public health, since March of 2020 have been wrong, wrong, and wrong again, to the death and injury of billions. And it's really absurd. It's what truth, we know not truth, and that's fundamentally what the problem is. Interesting, I looked up the original definition of science, that guy's journal, Dr. Thorpe's magazine, Science. It originally came from the Latin word scientia, which meant knowledge, a knowing, expertness, or experience. All of those have been thrown away for the benefit of pharma and power.
Yeah, it's become whatever. Yeah, exactly. So one other thing I thought that was interesting that came out this week was related to this paper. It actually came out from an interesting source. But the paper itself is kind of scary, but it says what we've been saying for a while: lipo-nanoparticle-associated inflammation is triggered by sensing of endosomal damaging. And its goal is to say, how do we engineer our way out of this? But again, lipo-nanoparticles being the thing that we talk about a good bit here, that are the one of the things that made this shot so different, as well as little was known about what was going to be the outcome here, again, where they would go. So again, when they told you it would stay in the arm, it stayed in the arm. But I thought that this abstract was kind of funny because it says lipid nanoparticles have emerged as the dominant platform for RNA delivery based on their success in the COVID-19 vaccines and late-stage clinical studies and other indications. However, we and others have shown that LNPs induce severe inflammation and massively aggravate pre-existing inflammation. Here, using structure function screening of lipids and analyzing of signaling pathways, we elucidate the mechanisms of LNP-associated inflammation and demonstrate solutions. So isn't it funny, Stuart, that these, I mean, again, this is straight from, you guessed it, University of Pennsylvania, by the way, and University of Pennsylvania is actually where the whole kind of concept of pseudo-urinated mRNA kind of came from. Actually, the people who won the Nobel Prize came from a Penn. But it is interesting to see that they are now trying to figure out how to make it where this stuff doesn't cause inflammatory damage. Well, it's funny to me that they just say, hey, we know that, you know, that during the COVID-19, there wasn't an issue. But obviously, I guess they're just assuming that that was just a one-off because in the actual thing, they said, however, LNP's clear safety in the COVID-19 does not necessarily extend to situations in which LNPs are delivered via different routes and for non-vaccine indications. Right. Most importantly, our group and others have recently shown that LNPs can induce severe inflammation and worsen markers of pre-existing inflammation by up to tenfold. LNPs have been shown to activate the innate immune system across multiple routes of administration, including intranasally, intramuscularly, and intravenously. They induce secretions of pro-inflammatory cytokines such as IL-6 and TNF-alpha. And so, again, they're almost describing what we're seeing in response to the shot. But they start out the debate saying, oh, well, this is, you know, we know this happens, but it's, I guess we're just kind of lucky it didn't happen with the COVID-19 vaccine, right, Stuart?
Right, right. And what's interesting is if you think about the last one, the last sentences you just read, it validates what they have known from the beginning. There will be shedding with this technology because of the LNPs through the mucosa. And that's why the ladies that were in the 2-month trials had to use two forms of contraception. And Pierre Corey has talked about this a lot recently. And the fact is they knew that these things potentiate spreading or shedding. In other words, people are receiving the vaccines without having gotten the poke. But they're getting it through people who did get the shots. And
I go on to the
they've known this.
Yeah, I go on to the next sentence. If lipid nanoparticles' pro-inflammatory effects are not understood mechanistically and mitigated by reengineering, LNPs will likely fail in patients with pre-existing inflammatory diseases, including most elderly and hospitalized patients, and certainly will be unable to safely treat common inflammatory diseases, such as heart attack and stroke. So basically they're saying if we don't fix this, this is a failed platform, except for this one unique instance where we deployed it to the whole world, and it was completely safe and effective.
I just don't know how these people, I mean, they obviously, their conscience is seared.
Well, I think they realize that there's no way in heck they're going to get, there's no way in heck they're going to have the environment where this thing's going to cruise through on a two-month different manufacturing process, you know, hide the evidence type trial. And instead they realized that if they were to actually deploy this in a regular clinical trial, it's not going to go anywhere. And not only not going to go anywhere, the harms are going to be pretty obvious. So they're like, we got to fix this because everybody, it's all popular now, right? But if we don't fix this, again, most likely these people probably hold patents or something on the LNPs, their kind of science they've been spending a long time developing is going to go to the dustbin of history. It's still, to me, funny that we have deployed this in billions of people.
It's not going to go into the dustbins of history. And if there is real history, if there is a redesire to know the truth and to act upon it. The history books are going to be injurious to these people. And I hope they repent, because this is one of the worst evils known to mankind. It is just all horrible what they've done.
Yes. And then, funny enough, it says, again, I'm reading here, and this just goes back to even what I was talking about earlier, Senator Johnson was talking about earlier, when most of these people should have known. So in retrospect, LNP-associated inflammation could have been anticipated, as LNPs are one of the best-known adjuvants for vaccine, and adjuvanticity shares many mechanisms with inflammation. Even empty LNPs, no RNA cargo, induce comparable B and T cell responses to traditional adjuvants. Empty co-delivered recombinant spike provide vaccine roughly equivalent to those containing. So again, you know, these things are and they said, therefore, we sought to understand the fundamental mechanism by which LNPs induce inflammation, exacerbate pre-existing inflammation, and provide adjuvanticity. And so historically, we used LNPs to irritate the immune system to get vaccines to work. And again, not in any humans, but when they mess around with this stuff in the lab, they use these LNPs to get responses. And that's what
that's
call an adjuvant.
Design. Yeah, that's what the design of them is. But they are so wicked, they go everywhere, ovaries. And next week, we need to talk about the evidence from Japan that shows all these horrible types of cancer increases. But they concentrate in the ovaries, the brain, the pancreas, all of these horrible cancers that they're creating because of this inflammation. Once again, this was a part of my testimony over two years ago in federal court, because we've known this for well over a decade.
Exactly. This is nothing new.
Nothing.
And I think that's where it goes. I think that's what makes Senator Johnson pretty angry, is it's not just that they messed up and aren't admitting they messed up. But they knew the possibility or the very highly likelihood that this stuff would happen. And so in that case, it's very different when we think about somebody who is trying something and has negative outcomes, but somebody who tries something and knows there's going to be negative outcomes, or it's highly likely there will be, that they should be held to a different standard in terms of the retribution. So,
yeah, I mean, we will not experiment on humans with this toxic of an agent. We just won't do it willy-nilly. We won't do it unless there is a huge standard of concern that should have been and always had been, we thought, placed on these types of studies. But this is egregious what these people do.
Yeah. And then, yeah, the funny thing is, one of the first things they did with patients when they used this FDA, you know, the FDA used this in 2018, they actually dosed the patients with immunosuppressants, including dexamethasone, to prevent side effects when they gave it to them. So this just shows you that this was known. I mean, 2018, I'm pretty sure Stuart was before COVID. I'm joking. Yeah. It was. And the FDA was the people that were doing this. You know, they were approving these protocols. So, and with that, again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley. We will be back in the next two segments. I'm going to spend time talking about Senator Ron Johnson's second part of his interview, and then Stuart will come back and continue the discussion on Asim Malhotra's interview, the second part as well. Again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley with America Out Loud Pulse. Always one beat ahead.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Today's high-stress, on-the-go lifestyle makes it hard to stay heart healthy. Lifestyle changes like exercise and diet are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support three aspects of heart health: cholesterol, blood pressure, and triglycerides, with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 13 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
So, welcome back again. This is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley with America Out Loud Pulse. As I was doing last week, we were going to again kind of go over and review and talk about Ron Johnson again. I think a leader in the Senate for his views on what's going on in our domain, which would be science and health. And I think he does a good job of kind of looking at the reasons that so many of these experts have a view of human life as well as a view of science in a very atypical standpoint. It's in the culture, as in our culture is much more post-Christian, post-God matters, post-people matters. But in that regard, why science also has so many kind of outlandish, unethical things at play. And the first thing that he talks about is in relation to why most of these organizations like the WHO and a lot of other NGOs like WEF are really focused on population and its kind of its intersection with even things like climate change. So, which again, climate change as they describe it. So here's Ron Johnson.
Well, I think Henry Kissinger was certainly part of the group back in the 70s that were promoting this, you know, population control. You had people like Paul Ehrlich talking about the way we're going to, you know, starve, you know, great famine. We couldn't be able to feed ourselves. And of course, he lost those famous bets. The best way to control population is improve people's prosperity, because as you become more prosperous, you just tend to have less children, because they're able to survive, that you don't have such high levels of infant mortality. You don't need children to, you know, work your, you know, subsistent level farm. So the best solution, if you're concerned about overpopulation, is, you know, help people rise, you know, raise up their economies and have more opportunity, more prosperity. But I mean, you've always had the Malthusians. They've always been wrong. We've always been able to adapt. I mean, again, I don't know what level of population the Earth can sustain. I know there's, you know, massive populations primarily in Asia. Here in America, we still have, versus geography, we've got pretty sparse population. We have plenty of land. We feed the world.
Many of the experts that you have invited to testify, they share this belief, and it's a very well-substantiated opinion that COVID policies were actually a crime against humanity because of how gravely they violated Americans' rights and their human rights, their civic rights, and because of the scale of these violations. Do you share this perspective?
Certainly people need to be held accountable. We never should have mandated vaccine. You know, after World War II, they developed codes of just medical conduct after, you know, what happened with the Nazis. Which basically say you cannot be forced to take medical treatment. You just can't, that can't happen. You know, unfortunately, in U.S. law, and this really dates back to England and smallpox, where you know populations were forced to take vaccine. I can't really explain. Well, first of all, I think it seems to be an elegant solution. If you can come up with something called a vaccine that prevented disease, I mean, how great would that be, right? The problem is we've never been able to develop a vaccine for colds. I think you can argue the flu vaccine is pretty ineffective. I would say the COVID vaccine, other than maybe very, very early on with vulnerable people, there might have been some impact before the effectiveness waned. And then as the virus mutated, which was predicted, by the way, by people like Gert Van den Bosch, mm-hmm. saying that if the last thing you want to do is mass vaccinate in the midst of a pandemic, because you'll just drive variations, which is, real possibility. That's exactly what happened here. So to force an experimental injection product on the population that has been proven now to cause harm. There's nobody that can dispute the fact that the vaccine has caused harm. I mean, federal health agencies are admitting to myocarditis, but there's just such a host. I mean, the chart I show, Vayers over 37,000 deaths associated with the COVID vaccine. Again, Vayers dramatically understates the number of adverse events, over 1.6 million total adverse events. So you compare that to ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, flu vaccine. It's just orders of magnitude worse. The people that force that on the global population, I mean, I can understand why, people use those terms. I try not to use terms mm-hmm. like, as you mentioned. I'm just trying to hold people accountable. What
I think that's a very important point. First, I think he's looking at it through the lens of, the intentions of these people. I think the problem is yes, as we evaluate what went on and how the powers that be, the powers that are supposed to look out for our safety, ignored the obvious signs that not only did this not work, but it had significant consequences to a significant number of people. Some of those consequences we don't even know yet. But I think what he's trying to say at the beginning is it is kind of an elegant solution. It's a solution that you would want. But the problem is in reality, which unfortunately for anybody in health sciences, we exist in the reality, not what the textbook explains. Our understanding of a lot of these systems is limited. And in fact, the more and more we find out about them, it actually kind of exposes the less we know or how much we don't really know. And so, yes, that sounds great. But in a world where people are human and our bodies don't exactly operate like the textbook, that elegant solution is not elegant. It's a theory. And trust me, in medicine, many theories that looked elegant on paper seem to never get to the phase of, first of all, being available to anybody to use. Second of all, having a government mandate it at the direction of the entire nation, and it being dependent on you being even employed or feeding your family. So I think his explanation on why it was a seductive solution is valid. And the other thing that he goes on to say is, we already have been through this before. We understand that when the elegant solution by the experts is proposed, there has to be limitations on their ability to mandate such things, especially on vulnerable populations. It's something that we have known for a long time, but even was codified post-World War II. And it was like those experiences as well as laws didn't exist when it came to this in the context of fear. So from there, let's go on to the next part. part of this.
What I can do is I can try and expose the truth. One of my challenges is I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical researcher, although I've gotten a pretty good medical education over the last 3 or 4 years talking to, as I said, eminently qualified doctors and medical researchers. So I've got a pretty strong amount or a pretty high level of layman knowledge of what all has happened here. But again, to use those terms, I'm my role is to provide people the truth, to expose it as best I can. And I do it trying to use these eminently qualified experts who can speak with authority.
Well, you became an expert yourself on these matters because of your communications with these medical professionals. And during the most recent roundtable, you asked Dr. Robert Malone a rather peculiar question. You said, "I think one of the things that always bothered me is so much of what we're learning in terms of harms of these vaccines were clearly known before they were rolled out." And you mentioned the FOIA request to the Japanese regulators. And you mentioned that the successful vaccine targeting respiratory viruses was never developed. And then Malone described how, and then you, something that you just said, that vaccine got biodistributed, it was throughout the body. And that vaccines were highly toxic, some of their ingredients and so on, triggered acute inflammation. It was known before that. And then you mentioned the very mind-blowing uninterest among the healthcare authorities to actually analyze what's happening. And then talking about the vaccine mandates, it was clearly known in August of 2021 that they were not stopping transmissions, and yet they were mandated to millions of federal employees, millions of healthcare workers, and our military. It was clearly known, but yet the mandates were imposed. So do you think that maybe at this point, the evidence of intended harm is overwhelming?
I think so. And, you know, set aside the specific, you know, medical indications, I mean, the fact that the FDA went to court to prevent the Pfizer documents on their trials from becoming public for, what was it, 55 years or 75 years? Again, that wasn't Pfizer doing that. Pfizer allowed the FDA to do it on their behalf. I mean, the FDA should be all about transparency. And of course, because we had a good judge that did not let them get away with that, we're starting to see these Pfizer docs and documents, and we're starting to see the corruption of them. You know, how they didn't report a death when it occurred during the trial. They waited for months after the vaccines got the emergency use authorization. So there's a high level of corruption revealed just in the Pfizer trial data. I think more and more will be revealed as time goes by.
Yeah.
So, Stuart, I think that was an interesting point. I actually had always said that Pfizer was the one that was avoiding this. But I think in seeing it from that perspective, that the FDA was the one that went to court to prevent it from being revealed. There's a little bit of some blood or some culpability on the FDA's hands for sure. We already know that, but that just kind of exposes it, that they didn't want. They were complicit in the cover-up, in a sense.
The thing that was so eye-opening to me in that federal hearing that I was a part of back in March of 22, the DOD and Department of Justice were clearly blocking information. Actually, the judge, if you will recall the story, that the judge requested that their four experts appear before him. He didn't demand, but he requested. He didn't order them to, but he requested that they come, and they did not come. And there's a reason they did not come, because they would have been eaten alive had they been cross-examined. This thing has been from the start, it's been a military governmental operation.
Yeah. Let me play a little bit more of this, and then we'll comment in a second.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because that's the good part, holding these people accountable. During the previous interview with our magazine, you mentioned that if Republicans regain control over the Senate this November, then you'd become a chairman of the Subcommittee on Investigations, which is a part of the Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. How would you formulate the objectives of the investigation?
All you have to really do is read my more than 60 oversight letters. I'm laying the foundation for those oversight hearings. You mentioned, you know, some of the more I think notable oversight letters have to do with hot lots. That letter was really based on independent researchers that were taking a look at the VAERS system, and they compared 20-some thousand COVID lots to 20-some thousand flu vaccine lots. And I mean, the difference is stark. I don't have the numbers right off the top of my head, but I know one COVID vaccine lot had over 5,000 adverse events reported. The largest number of adverse events associated with one flu vaccine lot was, I think, 137. And there were hundreds of lots of COVID vaccine that had in excess of 100 adverse events. So it means there's, I mean, to me, I'm a manufacturer. That signals to me a manufacturing process that is not in control. Yeah, you know, I wrote this letter, didn't get a response for probably more than a year. And the response I got from FDA was, we don't see any variation in lots. I've outlined it for you. You know, these independent researchers have shown you that there's variation in lots, but they just deny it. It's like, you know, you're looking at something that's red and say, well, that's red. No, it's black. Hmm. No, it's really red. So again, it has been maddening from that standpoint. But, you know, the other, I think, more notable bit of oversight is, you know, we became aware of the fact that the agencies had the standard operating procedure of how they're going to analyze their safety surveillance systems, you know, primarily VAERS. They didn't follow it. They first of all denied that they did the analysis, proportional reporting ratios or empirical Bayesian analysis. You know, we got the run on for a couple of years. You find out, oh no, we're doing empirical Bayesian analysis. Okay, well, give it to us.
While people won't. Died.
Again, we fund these agencies. We pay these people's salaries. We fund these studies. This should be public information. Why are they hiding it?
Mm. So again, I think, you know, he's getting down to the more investigative part of this, but I think it needs to be done without a doubt.
I think the first time I heard Peter McCullough speaking on a video, he was talking about, I've been in charge of drug trials before. The standards on how you evaluate going forward the potential downsides of an agent, they've been established for decades. And it's amazing that there was never a release. And he said there should have been at least once a week release of the data between the Moderna versus the Pfizer versus the J&J, which ones are looking more dangerous potentially. And then he said, you would expect it once a week, certainly once a month. But here we are 4+ years later, and we still don't get them. It is an egregious, murderous.
Yeah.
It is murderous, cowardly, evil plan that's been put in place.
Yeah, I think that's earlier in the talk. Obviously, he tries to avoid saying that about these people because he wants to investigate, which is, I think he's good. But I mean, we can openly say that this is definitely not normal, and it is an egregious act of really defiance to what the bodies were supposed to be in the first place, which was to protect us, not to shield the manufacturer, not to shield the scientists.
More importantly,
it's to shield or help the
not
people.
To empower our governments. That's the game that's
exactly.
played on.
All right. And with that, again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley with America Out Loud Pulse, always one beat ahead.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse. I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley, and in this segment, we're going to review a little bit about Dr. Asim Malhotra. He is a well-known, internationally known cardiologist out of London with impeccable credentials. And unfortunately, as we discussed last week in the show, he was all on board, the biggest promoter of the COVID shots in the UK, went on all these popular TV channels and did interviews supporting it. And then, unfortunately, at the end of July of 21, his father, 72-year-old world-renowned doctor with in good health, dropped dead. And unfortunately, it took over 30 minutes for the ambulances to get to him, and he died and at his home. And it led Dr. Malhotra, Asim, his son, to evaluate why there was such a delay, because the ambulance driver told him it was a problem throughout the country because of all the excess deaths that were occurring. 6 months later, after being criticized for his critique, he took time away and did an in-depth epidemiological dive into it and realized what a horrible catastrophe these shots are. As a result of that, he has been outspoken and threatened many times. But backing up a minute, I found this audio of him. He, in 2019, he came out with a book. And here is a couple of minute intro into the book.
Back to business. Evidence-based medicine has been hijacked. That's my talk for today. Declaration of interest. I've written a book called The Poppy Diet, and many of you know about. I give all personal royalties from sales of the book to charity. Right. So, many of you know this. I think it's important to reiterate this, and it will make a lot more sense towards the end of the talk. But really, the reason that we have a healthcare crisis is because we have this epidemic of misinformed doctors and misinformed patients. And the root causes behind that need to be understood and recognized. So we have biased funding of research. It's research that's funded because it's likely to be profitable, not beneficial for patients. And in fact, two-thirds of research now in the UK in medical science comes from industry. It's not publicly funded, so that's a problem. Biased reporting in medical journals, biased patient pamphlets, biased reporting in the media, commercial conflicts of interest, defensive medicine, and last but not least, medical curricula that fail to teach doctors how to communicate and in fact, comprehend and communicate health statistics. Really important slide that I think explains a lot of why we have this problem in healthcare is that we're not actually able to improve patient outcomes as best we can, because the best available clinical evidence, unfortunately, is not very high quality. So some estimates suggest that maybe 10-15% of all published research is actually high quality and beneficial for patients. John Ioannidis, professor of medicine at Stanford, his own predictions, his own predictions suggest, and his own analysis suggests that 85% of published research findings are false. So that's a big problem, and there are many reasons behind that. Some of it's poor quality research, but a lot of it is because of influence of commercial interests and the bias that comes in with that. And last but not least, patient values and expectations are not taken into consideration very often. We think they are, but they're not. And without informed choice, you're not going to make good decisions for patients. You're not going to make good decisions together with patients. And actually, it's actually a relatively simple concept. And if we stick to this, then we can genuinely improve patient outcomes. Of course, we have our individual clinical expertise that informs us over the years as healthcare practitioners or as doctors. But I think one thing we can all acknowledge is that clearly something is very, very wrong if our healthcare system now is or has already collapsed. It's not on the brink of collapse, it is collapsed. We are not able to provide our patients with the best quality care because of the rising burden of chronic disease and too much medicine.
Yes, indeed. That's a pretty sad statement and an indictment of who we've become in our profession. And the evidence the last 4 years is even worse than he thought. Well, we're going to now jump to last week's testimony before the Helsinki Federal Court. And I think it was a circuit court, if you will. It wasn't the Supreme Court. But anyways, in sworn testimony, he discusses a lot of the egregious abuses that have killed and injured millions, if not billions, by now. And I think it's important for us to go back to his testimony from then, and let's listen to. So he's at the point in the he's just realized that he made a bad mistake. His father was killed 7 or 8 months before from the shot, and so in January of 22, because of his actions in talking to the head of the British Medical Association, they withdrew. After a month of mandates, they withdrew them. That's how science should operate. But he received a lot of critical assessments and actual threats. And then we're going to pick up on his testimony here.
The most critical research that was published on this issue, which I think the whole court should acknowledge, in August 2022, was published in the journal Vaccine. That research was conducted by some of the world's top independent of drug industry influence academics. That research was able to reanalyze the original randomized control trials conducted by Pfizer and Moderna. They were able to do this because new information was made available on the FDA's website and Health Canada's website. The conclusions of that paper were really very disturbing. The original trials that led to the drug regulatory approval of these vaccines revealed that you were more likely to suffer serious harm from taking the vaccine, specifically hospitalization, life-changing event, or disability, than you were to be hospitalized with COVID. That rate of harm at 2 months was very high, at 1 in 800. Just to give you some perspective, historically we have suspended other vaccines for much less. In 1976, the swine flu vaccine was pulled because it was found to cause a neurological syndrome called Guillain-Barré syndrome in 1 in 100,000 people. In 1999, the rotavirus vaccine was suspended because it was found to cause a form of viral obstruction in children, affecting 1 in 10,000. This was 1 in 800. In my view, it was very clear that given this information published in the highest impact vaccine journal in the world, peer-reviewed, and has not had any significant rebuttals, that this vaccine now, in my view, should never have been approved for use in a single human being in the first place. In my view, this very important court case, in some ways, actually is a distraction from the much bigger issue, which is there should be court cases around the world with a full inquiry into the pharmaceutical industry and an inquiry as to how we got this so very wrong. Of course, one could argue this is just one bit of research, but actually, unfortunately, there are many different strands of research that are showing a signal of considerable and common serious harm from these vaccines, from pharmacovigilance data, that is reporting what we call yellow card reports to the public. We have plausible biological mechanism of harm. We have other research called observational data. We have autopsy data also confirming that certainly with the majority of people who died within a short space of time the vaccine in relation to the heart was definitively caused by the vaccine. This is really a very, very, very horrific situation we've found.
Very, very horrific situation we find ourselves. By the way, at the very end, he said we have autopsy data. That goes to the report that was published maybe last fall, maybe early winter, that showed that 74% of autopsies of heart disease patients soon after the shots were caused by the shot. There was spike protein and lipid nanoparticles in the biopsies that they stained for. Sadly, we don't do these types of stains these days. The majority of pathologists won't do these types of stains, but it is horrific. And one of the world's experts, who was one of the biggest promoters, after his father dies, is convicted of doing the right thing, like he spoke of in the first audio recording I played, which was from 2019, a man of integrity who was fooled, misled, speaks out, and they attempt to silence him time and time again. He was threatened. And what do we get for that? We get more evidence, like Senator Johnson was speaking of earlier in the program, saying we can't continue down this insane path. If something is claimed to be black and you say it's red, even though the pigment in it is black, it's black. I don't care what the people say that want to be the authorities and silence those of us who can see the truth. And thankfully, we are on the winning side. But the reality is that if the color spectrum, if it is a color that is defined by it, it doesn't matter what you scream about and what you want it to be, it will always be that color, just as the same as XX and XY are female, male. Whatever we want doesn't make it real. And that is the trap that these fools that have killed and injured millions and millions of people, and Dr. Mahatra and Senator Johnson directly address it, but it's all insane. And further on, this was just the first half of Dr. Malhotra's testimony, and in the latter half of it, I'm just going to read several of the quotes so we can move through some of it quicker. Part of Dr. Malhotra's testimony reads as follows: evidence-based medicine and COVID-19 vaccine rollout. This is page 8 of his testimony that he submitted to the court. It is footnoted with almost 100 sources. Let me get that straight. That's not that many. It is 60 sources. And it says, neither the drug regulators nor the vaccine manufacturers have yet to share all the raw data from the pivotal trials of the COVID-19 vaccines. The raw data from clinical trials comprise thousands of patients, pages they have yet to be released from independent scrutiny. This is important because historically, when independent researchers have on occasion gained access to this data, then it can completely overturn the conclusions of the published trials. A case in point is Tamiflu. And this is well known in Europe, but here the suppression of the benefits of the harms, potential harms of Tamiflu persisted. Getting access to clinical case reports for Tamiflu ultimately revealed that the drug has no more effect than Tylenol for influenza and also came with small but significant harms. The UK government had spent $500 million stockpiling. The independent researchers who were able to analyze the data concluded that all industry-sponsored research should be considered marketing until proven otherwise. It is against this backdrop that transparency advocates sued the FDA to gain access to the data upon which the Pfizer vaccine was granted emergency use authorization. The FDA wanted a U.S. federal court to allow the agency 55 years to release that data. It was extended, I think, to 75 years, the request. By the FDA, not by Pfizer. This is what I think Senator Johnson mentioned. Why would the FDA, which is responsible for the oversight of more than $2.7 trillion in consumption of food, medical products, and tobacco, do this? Secrecy should never surround any public health intervention. And then a plaintiff in the lawsuit that the FDA lost on, a plaintiff, attorney Aaron Seary, said the government also sought to delay full release of the data it relied upon to license this product until almost every American alive today is dead. That form of governance is destructive to liberty and antithetical to the openness required in a democratic society. Thankfully, the judge gave him 8 months. page 9, shortcomings of informed consent decision-making in the medical profession. According to Professor Carl Hennigan, an urgent care general practitioner, the director of University of Oxford's Center of Evidence-Based Medicine, quote, with every intervention you do as a doctor, you must ask yourself two questions. How much difference does it make? How do I know this? Building on the Academy of Medical Royal College's Choosing Wisely campaign, it is instructive to note that the General Medical Council in 2020 issued guidance on the duty of doctors to engage in shared decision-making with patients, underpinned by informed consent. If the administration of the vaccine did not adhere to these principles, then it is also a significant breach of the General Medical Council duties of a doctor to, quote, give patients the information they want or need in a way that they can understand. Here is the conclusion. There was never any evidence justifying any COVID vaccine mandates, passports, or any other of the coercive measures adopted by various governments worldwide. Every patient who was offered a vaccine should have been made aware of what their risk from COVID-19 is according to age and risk factors. In keeping with ethical medical practice, doctors should have informed patients of their absolute risk reduction for infection from previous, more lethal variant being approximately 0.84% or 1 in 119 based on non-transparent data, and that this level of protection only lasts for a few months, possibly. They should also have provided more precise and robust data on what the actual absolute individual risk reduction of COVID-19 death from the vaccine is, what the true rates of serious adverse events, such as permanent disability, hospitalization, or death. What are they? It is only when doctors and patients have all their information that they can then be empowered to have frank decision-making conversations on whether any treatment is right for them. The profession must explain that optimizing metabolic health will give patients the best chance for ensuring that they are not just resilient to infection, but reducing their risk of chronic disease, including heart disease, cancer, and dementia. The time has come to stop misleading evidence flowing downstream into media reporting and clinical decision-making and resulting in unethical and unscientific policy decisions. It's time for real evidence-based medicine. Pfizer's pivotal messenger RNA trial in adults did not show any statistically significant reductions in all-cause mortality, and in absolute terms, there was actually more deaths in the treatment arm versus in the placebo. From my medical experience and the review of the sound data and scientific basis, I can confirm that in December 2021, the medical and scientific communities should have known that COVID-19 vaccines were proven to be far from safe or effective, and far from preventing transmission of COVID-19 or severe form of COVID-19. Most of them did not know. Although the results were available and showed early on in 2021 a higher risk of deleterious reactions such as cardiovascular events, the COVID-19 vaccine study should have ethically been halted and reconsidered. Strong language from a smart doctor. And with that, we're going to sign off and thank you once again for joining us on this week's America Out Loud Pulse. I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley and Dr. Jordan Barnes.